On the scale of red states to blue states, Utah is much more tomato soup than blueberry pie.
And the Californians we heard from seem to think so too.
If we do like a word association game, what would be the first three words that you would associate with the state?
Beautiful, I'd say fairly conservative.
It's a really pretty state. I've been there, you know, it's a nice spot. I don't know if it's for me. a little different, a little more conservative.
Now, there are a few Democratic blueberries here and there. Think Salt Lake City, Moab, and Park City.
But Republicans have held every statewide office since 2000, and they currently have a monopoly on Utah's representation in Washington.
And don't forget about the GOP supermajority in the state legislature. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. This season on State Street, we're looking at what Utah's known for and whether that lines up with how things actually are. And in this episode, we want to know, how conservative is Utah, really?
There's nearly 1 million registered Republicans in Utah. That's just over 50% of Utah's voting population. But they don't all think the same way.
While we can't read the minds of every single Republican voter, we do get a glimpse every election cycle.
Which would be one wicked cool superpower, by the way. But to your point, Sean, elections are the best peek into how voters are feeling at that moment.
One Utah special congressional race to replace U.S. Representative Chris Stewart can tell us a lot about where Utah Republicans are at and where they're heading. Okay, spoiler alert. Celeste Molloy won the Republican primary for the 2nd Congressional District. She is the party's candidate.
But how that happened says a lot about where Utah's Republican Party stands. So let's take a trip in the Wayback Machine to May.
Doesn't 4 months just feel like an eternity?
Oh, absolutely. I feel like I've lived 9 lives since then. Anyways, Congressman Chris Stewart had just announced that he was resigning from his District 2 seat due to his wife's health issues.
This was a big deal. Stewart had been in Congress since 2013 and was climbing the ranks of the GOP hierarchy in Washington, D.C. He was the only representative from Utah on the powerful House Appropriations and Intelligence Committees. Essentially, Stewart had some purse power on how Congress spent our sweet precious tax dollars.
Oh, and District 2 is also huge. It encompasses downtown Salt Lake City, the West Desert, and St. George.
To put that in perspective, Utah's 2nd Congressional District is actually geographically larger than 13 entire states. Take that, Rhode Island. That means that there's a diversity of opinions, too. A farmer in Beaver County might not have the same priorities as a city dweller in Bountiful.
The announcement sent shockwaves through the Utah Republican establishment, but they wasted no time starting the process to fill Stewart's seat. Governor Spencer Cox called a special legislative session to move election dates. He did that so there wouldn't be a 6-month gap of time between Stewart's resignation and his replacement taking office.
Things moved fast, and 13 Republicans threw their hats in the ring to run. In June, Sage and I packed up the State Street Mobile and made the drive to Delta for the Utah GOP's CD2 Special Nominating Convention. Beautiful country, by the way.
Welcome to Delta, Utah.
And me, oh my, was it a long day. Convention was held at Delta High School. There were campaign signs galore. And of course, all the candidates were outside schmoozing with delegates before the convention even started.
Former Speaker of the House Greg Hughes even served hot dogs and was working the mic in front of a large crowd all morning. And I gotta say, people seemed happy to give up their Saturday to participate at the convention.
Once the convention started, hundreds of Republican CD2 delegates funneled into the Delta High Gym to hear 11 of the candidates battle for their vote. Delegates from each of CD2's 13 counties sat together. They all cheered when their county was mentioned, and I must say, Washington County got loud.
So starting in the south end of the county, let's hear from all of you delegates in Washington County.
Utah is a little different than most states. Political parties here often choose their general election candidates at a convention, not a primary. Primaries only become a thing if a candidate chooses to forego the convention route and instead gather signatures to appear on the ballot, setting up a race between multiple people.
This time around, two candidates went the signature gathering route, Becky Edwards and Bruce Huff.
The rest were at the mercy of CD2 delegates at the Delta High School gym.
The most familiar name among the candidates was without a doubt Greg Hughes. He was the former Utah Speaker of the House and ran for governor. And for a while, he definitely looked like the front runner.
Hughes was in the legislature for 15 years and had a reputation as a hard-fighting conservative. The guy was an actual boxer.
I am a fighter. I've been the tip of the spear.
He was also one of the earliest supporters of former President Donald Trump in Utah.
The man has a fan base.
If you send me to Congress, I commit to you that I will fight every day and I won't stop for you and these kids of mine. Thank you.
Delegates to a party convention like this have a reputation for being more hardline than your typical GOP voter. And many of the people we talked to thought Hughes would be the runaway winner of the day.
All these candidates have very similar messages, but only Greg Hughes stands out on that stage when he orates and speaks to the audience. I mean, the guy's like a game show host. Just Greg Hughes has such a better command of the ability to orate than all the other candidates. I want someone with a powerful ability to connect with an audience to get the votes in Congress.
I want somebody who's strong. Greg was Speaker of the House here in Utah. I just see him as somebody who gets it. He understands what has to happen. And when he gets there, he's ready to hit the ground running.
But things didn't follow most people's expectations. Hughes was the main vote getter in every round of voting. That was until former state Republican Party Vice Chair Jordan Hess stepped in. He had been a candidate, but when it was clear Hess wasn't moving forward, he threw his weight behind a relatively unknown candidate, Celeste Malloy. That gave her the votes for a majority in the final round, defeating Greg Hughes.
I cannot overstate how much of a surprise this was.
I'm thrilled.
Did you expect it?
I didn't know what to expect coming into this. I've been working hard. I've been talking to delegates.
I don't think she's super divisive in the way she approaches things. At least that's not what I've seen exhibited from her, as opposed to some of these other candidates. I appreciate that she takes a thoughtful stance rather than a divisive, let's just repeat talking points type of stance. I feel like women bring a different way of thinking that's necessary. And for the fact that half of the country is essentially women, we deserve to have that representation. So I'm all for women in politics and I encourage it 100%. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here.
Malloy has served as Stewart's chief legal counsel since 2019 and was endorsed by the congressman himself to be his successor. She also snagged the endorsement of former Republican Representative Rob Bishop.
But then, the drama.
We're going to take a quick break. When we're back, what can Malloy's convention win and the tight special primary race tell us about how conservative the state really is?
You're listening to State Street.
Support for State Street comes from the Hinckley Report podcast, a weekly roundtable discussion about the biggest political headlines in the Beehive State. Find new episodes of PBS Utah's The Hinckley Report every Friday, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to State Street. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. So Celeste Malloy emerged victorious out of the GOP primary. She got more than a third of the vote in a district that spans both urban and rural parts of the state.
But her win didn't come without some ruckus.
Only a few days after the nominating convention, people started raising questions about Malloy's eligibility to be a candidate in the first place. People cried foul over her inactive voter status in Utah after moving to D.C. to work for Stewart. They also questioned whether she was even a registered Republican.
TLDR, essentially, the hard right Republicans were not pleased with a Malloy convention win, so they exhausted all the options to try and remove her from the ballot. One Republican also running for CD2 even filed a lawsuit against her.
That's right. Quinn Denning claimed the lieutenant governor's office broke the law by allowing Malloy on the ballot. That's because she wasn't registered as an active Republican when she filed her candidacy paperwork.
Lieutenant Governor Deidre Henderson said Malloy met all the requirements to run for office, and the court agreed. They threw out the lawsuit, and she was officially the party's candidate in the race.
The initial party drama was over, but the rest of the primary was still a nail-biter.
Candidate Becky Edwards gave Malloy a run for her money. Edwards is no stranger to politics. She was a former Republican state representative and definitely positioned herself as a more moderate candidate. She also ran against U.S. Republican Senator Mike Lee in 2022, but did not win. Here, she came within a few thousand votes of Malloy.
The third candidate in the primary race was Bruce Huff. He's a businessman and former state GOP chair in the 1990s. He finished with about a quarter of the vote.
After primary voting ended, it took almost 24 hours for the Associated Press to call the race and Edwards to concede.
I talked to Malloy on primary election night.
I think tonight says that voters have been really engaged. I don't want to rehash all of the old arguments. They're stale. They've been disproven. But I do think that tonight's results show that vicious campaigning doesn't carry the day. People don't like it. I think people want to hear from candidates about the issues. They want to hear policy. They want to know that whoever's representing them will represent. I think people are tired of playing politics. They're tired of people throwing sound bites of red meat at them. They're hungry for substance. They want to know that someone cares about the issues they care about and someone's going to show up in their counties. Someone's going to answer the phone if they call. Someone's going to engage with their local elected officials and help out with the issues that are affecting them in their hometowns.
Do you think this primary says more about policy differences between the candidates or geographic differences? You handily won all the rural counties in your home turf of southern Utah. Other candidates did well in other more urban parts of the state. And that was kind of the same story about how you were able to come away with the win at convention, too. What does this say about the power of southern Utah politics?
Well, southern Utah is definitely growing in power, and it has been for a long time. I don't think anybody's surprised by that. But I think it also speaks to the policy differences. I've talked policy a lot in this race, and I've talked about my experience. I'm ready to represent this district on the first day, and I think that matters to people. I have some really powerful endorsements, including Congressman Stewart, and that matters a lot to people. People want to know that whoever wins is going to be competent, and so they're looking for somebody who can quickly get to work on their issues, and geography's part of that.
So Utah is one step closer to having its new CD2 representative, and now it's onward to the general election. But the primary race gives us a peek into how Utah Republicans might be shifting.
Although Utah is still a red state, the kinds of Republicans gaining influence is changing. To break it down, we caught up with Jason Perry and Morgan Lyon-Cotty over at the Hinckley Institute of Politics.
And they said the results say more about geographic differences in the state than policy ones. So Jason Perry and Morgan Lyon-Cotty with the Hinckley Institute of Politics, thank you both so much for joining State Street once again to help us unravel Utah politics.
Always good to be with you.
So the GOP primary to replace Chris Stewart. What are your main takeaways from those results?
Well, I can start for a moment, too, because it's shaped up to be something we're watching quite closely. And it's what happens when you have a battle between urban and rural Utah. You have, you know, a Davis County and a Washington County. What happens when you have a person who is from rural Utah and a person is from more urban Utah? So who shows up? Who cares enough to actually cast a ballot? And this has been an interesting race because of that. We'll talk about some of those details. But I was watching that one closely. And, you know, the punchline sort of is rural Utah did show up.
They really did. And we know that our districts are drawn, so they have urban, suburban, and rural. But this district, I think this election is really showing us, really highlights the power of those different areas. Because Washington County is our most populated rural area. And with Washington County, you have really dense areas of Salt Lake. You have half of Davis County. So you are seeing those differences, but you're also seeing that rural Utah is really ready and sort of hungry to have their own representative in Congress. And they showed up and voted that way.
Celeste Malloy told me on primary night that the results show that vicious campaigning does not work. What did the results tell you about the CD2 electorate?
It shows that rural Utah really came through for a stated desire they had for a very long time, which was to have one of their own in Congress. She made her case through lots of debates, lots of visits, lots of conversations, and rural Utah saying, it's time you have a representative. That message was received, and they came through.
It also shows the power of endorsements. Everyone was, not everyone, but a lot of people were surprised when she made it out of convention. But when she did, she didn't just rely on that endorsement from Chris Stewart. She really accrued mayors, and especially those rural county and city leaders, trying to show, this is where I'm from, these are my roots, and it's time that rural Utah had someone in Congress.
Looking at the results overall, what do you think this primary says about the average Utah Republican voter, outside of CD2 even?
I want to go back to what Celeste Malloy said on election night about how voters are exhausted by the red meat. We are hearing this a lot, that people are trying to get away from that polarization and that partisanship. And there was some of that red meat thrown out. We saw some negative campaigning, but we didn't see that from Malloy or Edwards. And they really weren't focusing on those really red meat issues. It was about the moderate, the practical conservatism. It was about rural issues. And there wasn't a lot of that infighting or red meat coming from either of the two front runners.
But they did sort of claim a part of this political spectrum.
They for sure did. I just mean that they weren't throwing those political grenades at each other.
It wasn't like that. It was almost like, you know, you say, you know, the Republicans, yes, but Becky would say, I'm the moderate Republican. Celeste would be the more conservative Republican, which I think is interesting because, to Morgan's great point, it didn't really translate into this is the issue that proves that point. It was more campaigning on that portion of the spectrum.
And I think that brings up an interesting point. You have the quote-unquote establishment Republicans, the quote-unquote moderate Republicans, and the quote-unquote conservative Republicans. How do you kind of explain the differences between them, and how do these candidates fit into those boxes, or do they even fit into those boxes?
Well, I think they do to some extent. Some of it broke out by issue a bit. So you take, for example, Celeste Malloy would say she's more conservative end of the spectrum. And I think that Bruce Huff was trying to get a little bit of that end of the spectrum as well. But she went beyond just that, I think, where she was trying to, you know, to appeal to like some of those rural issues. You know, she was the one that knows all about public land. She knows about water, for example. She knows about how to navigate the federal government that way. So I think she kind of tried to turn that conservative viewpoint she had into sort of some tangible issues themselves. And I think that resonated in that particular case. I think it resonated beyond just on the more conservative one. It was like on the more conservative one. And also I understand these particular issues. I know that because I've talked with legislators down there. I've talked to people down in southern Utah and say, well, those issues are we care about. And she can label herself that way. But also I know that she understands this issue. So they turned out.
And Sean, when you said establishment Republican, I actually was trying to figure out what that means anymore. So does that mean the George Bush in Utah, the Mike Leavitt, those types of Republicans? Or, I mean, those Republicans that are in office right now that think of themselves very anti-establishment, they're the ones in the establishment. So are they the establishment ones? So this is what the party is trying to figure out. And this is also what voters are trying to figure out, where they line up on the spectrum. And candidates have to try to thread that needle of appealing to as many of them as they can.
Particularly have so many younger voters that are sort of defying whatever established Republican is. Their views are changing dramatically.
And also in Utah, the 2020 gubernatorial primary and then the 2020 Senate primary, we saw the registration of 200,000 additional Republicans. We went from being in the 600,000s to now in the 800,000s, and they haven't fallen off the rolls. So in Utah, what does a registered Republican mean? Because a lot of those new people are more moderate or traditionally would not have even identified with a party.
That said, does this primary say more about policy differences between candidates or geographic differences?
I'm going to put it more on the geographic differences. I mean, in this really short period of time, I mean, I wonder how many voters say, I sat down and I walked through all three candidates. I understand what their positions are, all these things. There wasn't time for it.
I'm with Jason. I think this is about geography. I think the average voter could tell you, yeah, I think Becky Edwards is a little more moderate. I can't quite tell you very much about Celeste Malloy's policies, but I know she's from rural Utah and that she'll fight for what we want.
And since this is really kind of a test case since redistricting, does this mean Southern Utah is now a political force to be reckoned with?
Washington County and Iron County have been growing at extraordinary rates. And the past decade, we've had so much attention on the growth of Utah County and what that means and how it affects the power of Salt Lake County. And I think this is showing that maybe we're not paying enough attention to the southwest corner of our state and the importance they will play in elections moving forward.
I mean, the proof is in the numbers right now. In this particular case, we've just seen this rise with Celeste Malloy that kind of suggests that after all these years of rural Utah saying, you know, everyone that represents us is all urban and they don't understand our issues very well. Well, this is maybe the moment where they're trying to get someone that says they'll change that.
Whew! That marathon of a primary race is over. Elections are like my Super Bowl, though. So, of course, I loved every minute. I also loved the insight it gave us about where Utah Republicans are headed.
As Jason Perry and Morgan Lyon-Cotty so eloquently put it, rural Utah has more skin in the game and more power than ever before. So, getting back to that question we started with, how conservative is Utah? Utah is definitely still a red state. Confirmed. But it kind of depends on where you are and what you mean by conservative. There are a lot of terms that get thrown around during an election, and geography complicates things, especially when the timeline for an election is so tight.
Utah Republicans just aren't really a fan of the Trumpian brand of politics. They don't want a verbal bloodbath. They prefer representation of their values in something that seems familiar to them. Voters, specifically in Southern Utah, want to see themselves reflected in their representative.
That reflection doesn't always rely on policy. Voters might not know where Celeste Malloy falls on every single issue, but they do know she doesn't live along the Wasatch Front.
And that, this time around, really mattered to the people who turned out to vote.
And that does it for this episode of State Street. I'm Sean Higgins.
And I'm Sage Miller. The show's executive producer is Caroline Ballard. Editing and production support comes from David Childs and KUER News Director Elaine Clark.
Our digital team includes Jim Hill, Eleanor Gomberg, and Raquel Davis. And special thanks to Bijan Siavoji, who gathered audio for us in California.
State Street is a production of KUER. Just can't get enough of the show? Sign up for our newsletter for behind-the-scenes content. And we'd love to hear what you think. Leave us a review wherever you're listening. See you next week. I pronounce gubernatorial. What?
Gaba gubernatorial.
From KUER.